Welcome back to another episode of Stand Up, Sit Down. I'm your host, Nick Perdue, and I'm joined here by the hilarious, the talented, the beautiful Takara Carthan.
Hello.
Stay tuned.
You are now tuned in to Black Hollywood Live. Stand up, sit down.
Kara.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. So far, so good.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Damn it, welcome.
Thank you.
How do you feel?
Damn it, thank you. I feel good. So far, so good.
Yeah. And just earlier, because now I'm just gonna say it.
Yeah.
You and Nick, your husband, if you guys remember.
Oh, if you guys remember.
Couple weeks ago, her husband,
yes,
Nick Hollywood Carthan.
Yeah, he was
here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've been going back and forth and really trying to kind of get him on the show. And so you were just talking about how when you guys were moving out here, you're like, we are gonna get on the show.
Yes.
And fast forward to 2016, it finally happened.
4 years.
4 years. You guys are here now.
We are here now.
So
yes.
it's fantastic.
Super excited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. Because I have seen you on stage. I've seen you perform and rip and kill.
Oh, thank you.
Just rapping, killing. I'm like, oh my God.
What?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So let's just dive right into
right
it.
Right on in. Just
because you're from the East Coast.
I am from the East Coast.
Right, from New York, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what was that like? What was that like growing up in New York?
Growing up in New York is, it was crazy. I am the third oldest of 8 children.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm also a twin.
Wow.
And yeah, and we grew up in the South Bronx, which was not nice at times.
Right.
But, I mean, overall, I think I had a pretty decent, I want to say decent childhood, but I guess it depends on what we're comparing it to. But it was cool. Growing up in the South Bronx is definitely different from California.
Yeah.
Definitely different. But it was, you know, I loved it. I wouldn't change it for the world.
That's good.
Yeah.
And like school, you know, were you the funny kid? Were you clowning around? Did people hate you? What
was going on? No, in school I was the girl who got bullied.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, I was because we just didn't have it, you know, 8 kids, 2 parents, and it's hard. So we always had like the hand-me-downs.
Ah, yeah.
And it was funny because I come to school thinking I'm cool with somebody else's old clothes on.
Right.
And the girl who bullied me, I really couldn't say anything back because I had on her jeans. So it was like I wanted to tell her, you know, I don't like you either, but it was like, but I like your jeans. So
right.
It was like, it was so difficult growing up. So I was the kid who got teased, and then I turned into the girl who got bullied to the bully.
Okay.
Like it was crazy.
Right. So you went full circle, basically.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you can't beat him, join him.
No, it was I couldn't beat him, beat him. And once I found out I could beat him, I was like, I could beat him. I'm gonna beat every. It turned into that, but I enjoyed it though. My childhood was pretty cool. Never lonely though, I'll give you that.
Oh yeah, it was 8 kids.
Yeah, felt like 8,000 in that house. So
how big was the house?
We had we lived in a project. So before I realized we lived in a project, I thought we lived in a castle.
Right.
Like I thought we moved up, and it was a 5-bedroom, 2-bathroom.
Okay.
Living room, dining room, family room. It was like, you know, the ultimate place to live.
Right.
Until, you know, you hear gunshots in the hallway, and you're like, this isn't a princess castle, what is this? People don't die in fairy tale land. So it was, it made me who I am
right
today. And I wouldn't be who I was if I didn't have that upbringing. So I wouldn't change it.
So now I'm guessing with 8 siblings, there was a lot of jokes going on. Like, is that where you got the comedic chops, or was it just like, you know, making fun? Well, my mama's your mama.
I was never I was always a jokester growing up. I never thought I'd be a comedian though.
Mm.
I always thought my little brother would be a comedian.
Because
he was the funny person doing impersonations, just hilarious. And I just kind of fell into comedy.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't something I had ever thought I would do. And I was, you know, auditioning for a movie role because I always wanted to be an actress.
Mm.
And I didn't get the role, of course, but the producers said, you are funny.
Mm.
And the audition should have lasted 2 minutes, but it lasted almost 30 minutes because were in there laughing.
Yeah.
And the guy said, I need to see you on a stage.
Mm.
And I was like, well, do what you gotta do. And he made a phone call to a comedian in New York. And within hours, I was on stage.
Oh, wow.
And I show up to this place, and the guy goes, you know, such and such call for you. I'm going to put you on stage. And I said, cool. And the thing that was amazing was I wasn't even nervous.
Wow.
I wasn't scared. I was just like, well what we got to do? What I got to do?
Right.
And I get on the stage, and I did really, really well. And the guy calls me back on stage, and he goes, you know, did you guys enjoy her? And the crowd is like, yes. And he goes, well, how long have you been doing comedy? And I said, today's my first day.
Wow.
And he goes, what? And I said, yeah. And he goes, wow, you are going to go far if you stay, you know. Right. And that was it. I fell in love. And
how long was that set?
I want to say he told me I was going to do 5 minutes, but it turned out to be more like 12, 15 minutes.
What?
Yeah. And after the show, I asked him, I said, I thought I was only doing 5 minutes. And he said, you were doing so well, I just left you up there.
Wow.
You know, and I was like, okay, because that's what New York, you know, New York is the place you go to get tough in comedy. And they just like to see how long you can go. But it was great. And after that, that was it. I was at comedy shows as often as possible. Every single night. I was somewhere getting on somebody's stage.
Yeah.
And eventually word got around and that was it.
So, because like, you didn't have any like written jokes.
No.
Were you telling stories? Like what were you saying?
I was telling stories about my life, and it surprised me that other people went through the same thing.
Mm.
And sometimes we go through things and we think it's just us, and to find out that somebody else is like, oh, girl, me too, yes.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, you too. And somebody is like, mm-hmm, over here. And I'm like, oh, all of us, okay. It was just everything I talked about was just so relatable. And I didn't start writing jokes until I was about 2 years in. And that's when somebody said, you're funny, but you need a set.
Yeah.
Because every show I did, it was always different stuff. It was always off the top of my head. And finally, somebody said, you're funny, but people are going to start booking you based on your sets. You need a set. Write it, stick to it, perfect it.
Right.
And that's when I started writing more. And then that's when I started storytelling more. So, yeah. But it was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, how long did this high last before you got slapped in the face with reality? And was like, oh, my God, this is harder than I thought, and you got like, you know, and you got and you bombed essentially.
Oh, huh. You know what's funny? Nick always tells me I never bombed.
Mm.
You know how you
like
do,
ever?
Yeah. You know how you do a show and you don't think you did well?
Yeah.
But the crowd still enjoyed it and
right.
people are still coming up to you like, oh my God, you were so funny. But in your head you're like, I know I could have did that better.
Right.
So to my husband, I've never bombed. Like he always tells me, you know, because you don't do what stuff that we do. And I'm like, right. what? And he's like, because you've never bombed. And I'm like, I've bombed. And he's like, no, you haven't. And I'm like, yes, I have. And he's like, no, you haven't. And I'm like, well, they didn't laugh the way they usually laugh. He's like, but they laughed. You
right.
know what it is to hear nothing but silence or people going, get him off the stage. And I was like, no. And he's like, so you never bombed. But my reality check came when I moved here.
Mm.
And being on two different coasts, the jokes, I realized I needed to have more diverse jokes versus the urban jokes.
Mm.
I need to be able to reach broader crowds.
Right.
And that's when I came here. And I did the J spot first show here. and I meant that in a good way. I did the J spot my first time here. And I did great. Mm. I did good, but I didn't do great.
Right.
And it was because I felt like I was doing East Coast jokes. So they didn't understand the trains.
So it didn't translate.
Yeah, it didn't come over well.
Right.
And that's when I was like, okay, this didn't work. This is gonna be harder than I'm gonna think. Let's go to Staples and buy some notebooks and stuff, and let's write. Let's we gotta get this together.
Okay.
And that's when I realized that I needed to.
Right, really kind of hone in and like just get some stuff. So when you write and when you create a joke, like what is that process like now?
Something happens in my life, and I go, oh, that's funny, and then I write it down.
Okay, and then like, how many times do you say it? Like, how many times do you go to open mics to kind of like get it ready before you tell it in front of like real people?
Okay, honestly, the scary thing about my writing process is that I literally write that joke, just that premises of it.
Mm.
I never write anything else about it. Like, say I want to talk about how my dad talks too much. Like, my dad just talks. Clearly, I get it from him, but he just talks too. He will talk about seven different things in 7 seconds.
Wow.
And you'll just be like, what? And if I want to do a joke on that, I will just start off simply saying, my dad talks too much. And that will be how I write my joke. It'll say, my dad talks too much. And everything else will be freestyle off that.
Mm.
And then I don't do open mics. I'll go on stage and I'll put it, I'll push it in between a set somewhere where I know I'm gonna, this joke is gonna land at it high, mm. and then I'll try to slide it in while the audience is high and see what it does. Mm. And if it doesn't do well, then I'll, you know, I'll have something else I'll have to back it up to wiggle it back out.
Right.
But if it does do well, then I'll take note of it and then I'll write on it. And then I'll say, okay, well, I said this, and maybe I should add this, and maybe I should do this. But I've never really gone to open mics and been like, I'm going to try this joke.
Interesting.
Because I feel like I'm not going to get the genuine response because of the people who are at the open mic. I need the people who I want to get this joke to be there when I try it. So sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it's like, and then he fell.
Right.
Nothing.
Crickets.
So then let me tell you about my daughter. Let me tell you what she did. And then I know that joke will pull something off. But that's how I just, I try to write. It's boring to me.
I get, yeah, it is. I mean, it is. Like, but if you have like a funny concept and if it, mm-hmm. if it makes you laugh, mm-hmm. you know, and then writing it down, I think that really helps it. And so mm-hmm. if you're laughing while you're writing it,
yeah,
you I can know do, it's
going to be fun. But it's just, I don't have time. I have 3 kids. I don't have time to write. I have a 2-year-old who, as I'm writing, she'll come with a crayon and scribble over everything that I just wrote. So I literally just, my phone has become my best friend when it comes to any jokes or any premises to anything. It just goes in the notepad of the phone, and I try it on stage.
Yeah.
That's
and just... so you and Nick mm-hmm. don't talk about jokes.
No.
Which is like it's so interesting to me.
No, we can't.
Because both of you are fantastic comedians.
Thank you.
Right? And so mm-hmm. and I mean you would just think, right? You're in the household, you know, maybe it's pillow talk. I don't know when it would come up. You know, catch you in the shower. Hey, I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
But you guys don't talk about jokes.
Well, the thing is that we have two different, completely different types. Like, we're just like two different comedians,
right.
You know, and we've had two completely different backgrounds, upbringings, and just two different lives. So what I think is funny may not be what he thinks is funny, and what he thinks is funny may not be what I think is funny.
Right.
And trying to get him to think that what I think is funny is so hard, because he's like, I'll be like, you know that joke you do? And he'll go, yeah. Well, maybe if you said this instead of this. And he goes, no. No. And he'll do the same thing with me. You know that joke you did? And I'm like, yeah. Well, maybe if you said this instead of that. And I'm like, it's not funny.
But, okay.
He's like,
but,
it's not funny at all. I'm like, no, that's not. That's not. I would bomb. I would bomb if I did that. That's not funny. I can't do that. Sorry. So we don't even, we just try to keep comedy out of the household a little bit. I know it sounds really difficult to do when you're married to a comedian, but our lives are like, comedy. And we've tried to sit down and write together when we first got together. We used to take shots, and we used to have Jack Daniels lined up.
Jeez.
Yeah, the shots of Jack. And we would pull topics out of a hat in our house, just the two of us.
Mm.
And with this topic, you have 30 seconds to make me giggle or chuckle or go, okay, that's funny.
Right.
And if I don't do that, you have to take a shot. Which is really hardcore with a person that you're in a relationship with.
Yeah.
So he'll pull a topic out, and it'll be like trees. And he'll be like, trees. Okay, trees. So I remember one time I was climbing up this tree when I was little. You know, I hate trees, you know, whatever. And I'll be like this. Take a shot. But it'll be the same thing with me. Like, mine would be like bugs. And I would try to do a joke about bugs.
Right.
And if we didn't laugh, we didn't go. But if it was something that made us chuckle, we wrote it down and said, okay, maybe we have something with this. Let's push this. But it was just like a way of just to get our minds working.
Yeah.
You know, just to broaden things. And then it got us drunk.
Right.
I mean, winning, like, what more could you ask for?
I mean, you know, alcoholism. But, you know, that's where comedy comes from.
Yeah. And the more shots you had, the funnier things got,
right.
Of course.
Right.
It was, I mean, but that's what we used to do. But now we're just like, you know, he has his different style. I have my style. And just, you know, we just leave it where it is.
So now, like, are there jokes or other things that you wouldn't say on stage because you know, like, Nick is gonna hear it?
No.
So nothing is off limits.
You know what? Things are off limits. Most of the time, we're okay with everything as long as we know before you say it.
Mm.
There are times where I'll go see Nick perform, and he doesn't ask me if I'm okay with him saying something.
Mm.
One of his jokes is I had a breast reduction,
mm.
and the first time he did it, he didn't ask me. And we're in, on stage. He's on stage, and it's got this. And I went up after him, which was perfect. Because then I got to my rebuttal to him. But he goes, "So my wife got a titties cut off," and I was like, "What?" And of course, everybody's looking right at me, and I'm like, "Oh." So of course, when you know he's done with the joke, and he's like, "She got a breast reduction, you know, because she this and she that." And then of course, when they call me up, they say I'm his wife.
Right.
So as soon as I get on stage, everybody's looking at my boobs.
Yeah.
So I'm just like standing there, and everybody's looking at me, and I was like, "I'm really need y'all to get off my boobs for a second. Let me explain to you what happened first." And it was a great segue into my part of my stand up, but it was just like we didn't discuss that.
Right.
Because I didn't, we just moved to LA. I didn't want people to know.
Right.
You know.
This personal.
My business.
Yeah.
But he was like, "But it happened, you know, whatever." And like he was like so nonchalant, and I was like, "Wow." So certain things are off limits. It's just, things really aren't. I'm sorry, aren't off limits. It's just we want to know you're going to talk about it first,
right?
So that way I can be, you know, maybe I could be like, "Well, can you not say all of this? Just like you can stay in that area, but let's like stay away from this."
Yeah.
But with him, you just don't know. You just
fly off.
Yeah, you just, there's times I've been at a show and he's performing and he'll say something and you'll hear me in the back genuinely go, "What? Are you serious?" And of course everybody's laughing because they think it's hilarious, and he goes, "And there goes my wife," if you didn't tell. And it's just like, it's fun though.
I think it's fun. It adds to the show.
Mm-hmm, it does.
Yeah.
That it does.
That is hilarious. Mm-hmm. So you have kids. You have three kids. Mm-hmm. So now also, because that's, you know, like your mom, your wife, and there could be some things that you may say on stage that your kids may find, you know, in this digital age now, a couple years later, or because you have a son who's, what is it, like 14, 15? Yeah.
He's found some stuff.
Right.
He's come to me.
You have to have that awkward conversation. So like, do you think about that before you say the joke, or is it just, you know what, I'm just going to say it and we'll just talk about it?
I'm just going to say it because it's true.
Yeah.
And I don't care.
What? No,
because
now
you're getting on my nerves and I need to vent. I want to fight you. So let me just vent on stage. I'm going to fight you today in the house. Me and you. That's my 15. He's bigger than me too. And it's like some of the stuff we talk about on stage. One of the jokes I do is I tried to have the sex talk with him. It didn't work out the way I thought it was. Like what I thought I was saying isn't what I was saying.
Right.
So and he noticed it and he was like, "Could you stop?" And I was like, "No, because I need to tell you about love. Because if you love someone, you can't have sex unless you love each other, because a lot of feelings get involved." And he's like, "Stop it." And I'm like, "No, I need to talk to you." He's like, "Stop." So he texts Nick and he's like, "Tell her to stop." He's not even in the house. And he calls me and he goes, "I don't know what you're doing, but for him to text me and ask me to tell you to stop, just stop." That's and I was hilarious. Like, "I'm having a sex talk with him." And he's like, "Are you serious? Stop it. What is wrong with you?" And I was like, you know, he reached up above me to get something and he had hair under his arms and I freaked out. I was like, "Why does he have hair under his arms?" And he's found some stuff though.
Mm.
And he's brought it to my attention and he's like, "Mom, really?" And I'm like, "Well, that was like 3 years ago and that was happening." And he was like, "But everybody's gonna know it's me now." I know. "You're gonna be like sort of popular. Just like, eat it up, man.
Right.
Enjoy it." And he was like, "I don't like this." And I was like, "It's not gonna stop."
It's only gonna
get
worse.
Got a long way to go and you're only 15. You've got a long way to go.
What did he find? Because now I'm curious.
Okay, I did some footage. I did that one with I was trying to have the sex talk with him. I also did one with just him being a young man and just growing into his body and discovering, you know, being, you know, starting to mature in certain ways.
Right.
I did that, and that was one he didn't like. He was like, "But that's my business." I was like, "You're not the only boy who goes through stuff like this." He was like, "But I'm the only one whose mother puts it on stage." And I was like, "Actually, you're not. A lot of parents do this to their children."
Yeah.
And he goes, "Why?" I said, "Because you guys get on our nerves."
It's therapy.
And it's legally, this is all we can do to not get in trouble. But yeah, he, you know, my 10-year-old found some stuff too. Yeah, she's come to me like, "Oh, I said that?" I was like, "You did." "I did say that, right?" I was like, "You did. I remember that day." I was like, "And it was embarrassing." And now I have to stay it on stage so I can feel better about myself.
That's so funny.
Yeah. It's cool though.
How do you maintain this work? Because you do have like a regular job too.
I do. I'm a teacher.
So you're a teacher, you're a mother, you're a wife, mm-hmm. and you're a comedian. Mm-hmm. How do you balance all of this?
A lot of people ask me that. I don't know. I think that when you want something bad enough, you will find a way to get it. And sometimes we don't realize what we're doing to get there. We're just doing it.
Right.
And I feel like if I stop and think about it, I'm going to lose my mind. I just do it. So my day starts at 5:30 a.m. And I'm up and the kids are up and Nick's up, surprisingly. And he gets the baby dressed and then they get in the car, everybody except for Nick. And I drive them to school and drop them off where they need to go. And then I go to work. And I'm a teacher at a jail, which is very difficult to do, with male inmates, which is awkward all day. Sometimes I have to tell them, if you're going to make me feel awkward, we're going to all feel awkward in this classroom. They're going, no, Miss T, we sorry. And then I get out at 3, and then I try to work out for an hour, depending on traffic. And then I pick the girls up, and then I go home, and then I cook dinner. And then my son usually comes in at around 7, and if I have a show, I'm showered and out of the door by 7:30.
Wow.
And sometimes I don't get home till 11, 12, sometimes 1, to wake up at 5. It's really hectic, but I want something. I have I just want it. You know, we gotta do what we gotta do.
Yeah.
Everybody's hustle's different.
This is very true.
Yeah.
This is very true.
Yes.
So okay. Yeah. So you're a teacher at a jail.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about? Like how does one become a because we know that there's juvenile detention centers and there's youth. Oh, so this is
grown men.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
And but like what do you What do you teach?
I'm a life skills coach. So okay. I teach substance, alcohol abuse, domestic violence, parenting, and anger management.
Okay. So it's not like Algebra 2 or something?
No.
You're like, okay.
No. When I first moved here, some friends of mine were substitute teaching at this particular school. And they offered me, say, hey, listen, you need extra work. They're subbing. Mm-hmm. And the money's decent. So I said, okay. So I got into it and I started subbing at the jail. And then they offered me a permanent position because... you know, I have the credentials for this, and I take the position, and it's just, it's an amazing job, though. I'm not going to say it isn't. It's very different, though. There's lockdowns, there are perverts, there are, I don't want to say gay floor, but I got that floor for like a little bit, and it was amazing. The stuff these men can do. With what they have in jail is amazing.
I can imagine.
I had an inmate do my hair.
Wow.
And he asked me, I asked the deputy, I said, can I bring my flat iron in? He said, fine, just one time. I said, cool. And this gay guy, he's like ranting, oh, I'm gonna do your hair, honey, yes. And I said, okay. So I bring my flat iron in. When I tell you he did my hair, I've never had my hair done that well before.
Wow.
And the next week, I got greedy. I tried to sneak my flat iron in the jail again.
Contraband. Look at you.
And the deputy says, you can't bring that in again. And I said, you listen, this cost me $90 out there. He did my hair for Snickers and 2 packs of soups, okay? He's going to do my hair again. He's going to do my hair again. Thank you. I appreciate
That's
you.
Hilarious.
Yeah, but it's an amazing job because... sometimes people just need to know that someone believes in them.
Right.
And if everyone had somebody that believed in them, maybe we wouldn't turn out the way that we do. A lot of them. And it's a great job to have. It's really difficult at times being a female teaching domestic violence.
Right.
Because they're already so prejudiced, like, how are you going to teach us domestic violence? I was like, you're going to sit down and I'm going to teach it? And they're like, but you're a woman. And I'm like, so? So how, aren't you going to be biased? And I was like... no. Well, why not? I said, because men can be victims of domestic violence, too. They can. I said, they can. So I could be a victim. I said, I doubt it, but you might be. Like, I don't know, but you could be. Really? I said, yeah. Yo, we could be victims. That's what he tells you. That's what he tells the other inmates. But I like it, though. It's just, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Now, you know, there's this... I don't know. You know, people say that women aren't as funny as men. That women stand-ups aren't as, or female stand-ups, female comics, well, however you want to say it. They aren't as funny as, you know, their male counterparts. And I mean, I beg to differ because, you know, I've seen plenty of women bomb. Mm-hmm. I've seen plenty of women rip stages just as well, if not better, than, you know, a lot of the guys out here doing it. So do you feel that there's like an extra weight on your shoulder every time you go on stage, just because, you know, like when you get introduced on stage, like, okay, this is a woman coming up here, like, I really need to make these people laugh. Or like, oh, let me see what she's really gonna do.
Yes. Because for most women, we have that stereotype of sexual context of our jokes. And I'm not gonna say all women. I've witnessed quite a few who get on stage and everything's sex, 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 sex.
Right.
And that's what's expected. So even if your content is sex and it's funny, it doesn't count because you cheated. Because everybody laughs at sex jokes.
Right.
Everybody can relate to sex jokes. And you're a woman talking about, you remember back in the day when you used to do this with your man? Of course all the women are going to be like, But to get out of that and talk about regular stuff, like the kids, and like, because a lot of times our comedy is based on what we live through every day, our daily lives. And what you're saying is that your daily life is sex.
Yeah.
What else happened to you today?
Right.
Other than sex, did you get up in the morning? Did you go to work? Did you feed the kids? Like, what else? So it's always that pressure on you to be funny without being sexual. Because I don't have any sex jokes in any of my content. Because I want to be funny without it.
Yeah.
And if I feel like being nasty, maybe I'll throw one in every now and then, depending on where I am.
Yeah.
But normally it's none, because I want to be funny because I'm funny, not because I threw out a sex joke to make you laugh. And it is a lot of pressure, because people don't think women can be funny. But I beg to differ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but do you think that there's an added weight on top of that?
Yes.
Being a black woman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because most black female comedians are perceived as ghetto. The ghetto. Oh. Yes, honey. Remember back in the day when you was, remember? And we're not all like that.
Right.
And it's like, not only is she a woman, but she's a black woman. So here she goes with the food stamp jokes and the welfare jokes and the government cheese jokes.
Yeah.
And then when you get on stage and you don't give that, they go, huh.
Yeah.
Okay. She's not what I thought she was going to. I've gotten that. I've gotten people come to me and be brutally honest and say, I thought you were going to talk about government cheese, the projects, and food stamps.
That's crazy.
Yes. When I get it, sometimes I'm so overwhelmed and I want to say something that's not nice.
Right.
But I always go, okay, well, I hope I changed your mind.
Yeah.
And there's always that extra added weight to it. Female and then black female. You know? Yeah. That's why I don't like being called an urban comedian. I don't like it. Just call me a comic.
Right.
What does urban mean? It means I cater to a specific crowd. I don't. Right. I cater to all. So don't label me an urban comedian. I don't like that. It's the same as labeling me a female comedian. I like when people bring me on stage and say, I have this really funny comic coming to the stage. Y'all gonna love, man, this comic is funny. They never say that I'm a male or a female.
Right.
I like that.
Right.
Because you give me an opportunity to stand up, to be something more than just a female comic. But this female coming to the stage, man, when I tell you she funny, and I don't see a lot of female funny comics, but this female here, because this female, what's her name? Female, her coming to the stage, female comic, female. Like, I'm more than just a female comic.
Right.
So, yeah. It's, I mean...
Well, and because, you know, like, at the end of the day, funny is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I agree.
You know, it's no gender, it's no race. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's funny, then it's funny.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
But. If you offend somebody, will you apologize for a joke? Like, it could be hilarious, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if someone feels offended to something that you said, will you apologize for the joke?
I think it depends on what it was.
Okay.
Probably not. I probably won't apologize because you're at a comedy show.
Right.
And it's not personal. And if you take it personal, that's an issue. That's a personal issue that you have.
Right.
But I would find myself apologizing often, because anything that you say could be offensive.
That's true.
And I don't have time to apologize to you because you came to a comedy show and wasn't ready to be optimistic. So... if you're really upset and you come to me after the show and you're like, I was offended, I'll be like, oh, I'm sorry. But you're not going to get like a, I'm so sorry. I'm going to be like, you know where you came, right? It's a right. comedy show. I know, but what you said was offensive, but I didn't write my set based on making your feelings hurt. I'm sorry that it made you feel that way, but I'm going to say it tomorrow at my show, too.
So the people are going to laugh.
So don't come to that show, okay? Because right. I don't want you to be offended again. But
how do you handle hecklers? Because I also feel that, like, in certain parts of the country, mm-hmm. Hecklers can be a little more difficult, especially to mm-hmm. female.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I can see a male comic go up and not do well, and he will not get heckled.
Right.
But if a female comic goes up and she not do well, she will get heckled.
Right.
And I warn them. I give them the warning. I say, hey, listen, man. Don't let this tone fool you, man. I get down and dirty. I don't think you want it. And then I had a guy at a show. He was just kept going. Mm. And I said, you know what? I didn't want to do this. And I just got at him to the point where after the show, he waited for me outside. And the security guards had to walk me to my car because he was so upset. I said, is that a ponytail? What are you, 50-something? Like, are those waves that go into a ponytail? Like, I know you sleep on your mother's couch. Like, you have to with this type of hairstyle. And I just, like, went off. And everybody was laughing. But it was kind of like that Nutty Professor thing.
Yeah,
he got back at the guy on the stage, the comedian, he was sitting there like this. Yeah, it was kind of like that. The guy, and he was so angry that when I got on stage, security had to escort me to my car. So I try not to handle hecklers. I like to think that the host would make sure that we don't have that.
Right.
But if it does happen, I warn them first. And then, you know, whatever happens, happens. Yeah.
But have you ever gotten into a fight?
Oh, no. No. Like a physical confrontation.
I mean, because, you know, like some people could be, you know.
No, I've had women get really upset.
Some comics get a little, you know.
Get a little rowdy. Like,
yeah.
I just, my mindset when I go on stage is I just want to make you laugh. And if you don't laugh, that's okay. And if you get upset, I just don't take it personal.
Right.
So if somebody heckles me for something I said or they just don't think I'm funny, I don't take it personal. I don't know what you're dealing with today.
Right.
I don't know what your life is. I'm not going to physically fight you. That's stupid. That's crazy.
Snatch the weave off.
Yeah, right? I mean, I don't know. I've never gotten into a physical. I've had people tell me they didn't like something I said. Like, you said all ghetto girls do this. And I'm like, well, you're doing it.
Hold up the mirror.
You're just looking through. You see what I'm talking about?
That's funny.
You gave me another job. But no, I've never gotten into a physical confrontation.
Were you ever in a predicament to where you were in the back of a comic club or you were in like a green room or something and someone on stage did material that was similar to yours, if not like your joke, and you're like, "Wait a minute!"
Yeah, absolutely.
What happened? Like, what
I am about to go on. Actually, I'm next.
Oh wow!
And there's a female comic on stage, and she's doing. She's trying, and then she does my joke verbatim, like every single word.
Wow!
All about the children. And most people would say, well, maybe she wrote it because, you know, people have similar jokes.
Right.
And I'm like, but she doesn't have any kids. You can't do a joke about your daughter if you don't have a daughter.
Right.
And when I walked into the club initially, she was on stage, so she didn't even know I was there.
Mm.
And I'm sitting in the back and I'm just like, and Nick's there. And I'm like, dude. And he's like, I hear her. I was like, what is going on? And he was like, I know. I said, I'm up next. And he goes, I know. I said, that's one of my main, you know, I'm not going to do it after she did it. And it looks like I took hers.
Right.
And he was like, I know. I was like, is this what happens when people don't go to comedy clubs? People take their stuff and not think that they're going to.
Right.
And he was just like, please don't do nothing stupid. And I said, I'm not going to do anything. But like, wow. It's one of those things where, like, you want to be. You know, oh, well, that was nice that, you know, thank you.
Right, since imitations are, you know, sincere.
But at the same time, it's like, it's not even realistic that you took it because you don't have children.
Right.
And I was so bothered by it because it just let me know that it happens.
Yeah.
And sometimes often we see stuff happen to other people and we don't think it's going to happen to us until it happens to us.
Right.
And it just blew my mind. I was like, who else is doing this?
So, did you talk to her?
I did. I walked up to her and I said, after my set, actually. Mm. And I walked up to her and I said, hey. And she goes, hey, what's up, girl?
Oh, so like, so like, you guys were like friends, or she like?
Yeah, and I was like, I know this is gonna sound really childish, and I said, but I heard you doing a joke that sounded exactly like the joke that I do. Mm. And she goes, well, what joke is that? I said, okay, you're being funny now. So I gave her the joke, and she goes, that's not your joke. I said, well, it's not yours because you don't have any kids.
Right.
And she goes, girl, you tripping. Everybody do everybody's jokes. And that's when I looked at Nick and I said, I'm a killer. he said, let's just go. And we just left. And I was just like mind blown that they do it. And now that I'm paying more attention to it, I could hear someone do somebody else's joke. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there like, ooh, they stealing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it makes me look at you differently. It makes me look at you like you're not able to be productive in your own stuff that you have to take. It's scary, you know? Because people can go on television with your stuff and no one would know it's yours. And now here you are, you've been doing it for years and it looks like you took it from them because they got it on TV. It's really scary.
I mean, you know, like there's like two sides the way that I think about it. One, mm-hmm. it's a terrible situation this way. Mm-hmm. You know, you try and put as much stuff up online as you can to kind of like time stamp it. So, you know, someone's telling it now, they're like, well, I had a joke 3-4 years ago.
Yep.
But, you know, mm-hmm. I took it from you. And then the other side of it to where I'm like, okay, well, you know what? Fine. You know what? Take it because I'm not going to use it anymore because mm-hmm. I can write jokes.
And that was Nick. Nick said, you can write though.
Yeah.
And I was like, but that's mine. And he was like, but you can write it another one. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to write another one. I'm going to write the same one better.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Right. You know, let's punch it. Punch it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that way, every time they hear it, they'll be like, ah, I heard it somewhere else. It was funnier over there.
Right.
Yeah. But it's scary.
It is. And especially now because you have the digital, you know, mm-hmm. the media and you have Instagram and you got these memes mm-hmm. out here, people taking people's jokes, mm-hmm. which is, I think
turn
that's
them into
worse.
Sketches.
Right.
Turning them into, I've had so many people come up to me and say, hey, listen, you've got this joke. And I'm like, okay, so funny. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to turn it into a sketch. I was like, who's starring in the sketch? Mm. Oh, or such and such is going to star in it. But you can write yourself in. Because you want to write myself into my own joke? Well, yeah, because they have a media presence. So you're saying I don't matter. You just want my joke. You can write yourself in, and then we'll like put your ads and stuff, like your Instagram and Twitter. But they're going to be the main person because they have the big following. And I was like, but once I do that, it is no longer my joke.
Right.
Because if I do it on stage, it's going to look like I stole it from a sketch.
Right.
Sorry. I cannot do that. And they were really upset with me. They were like, really? And they called me for weeks, like, give us some, can you sit down with us and give us some ideas? And I'm like, are you going to pay me to write?
Right.
Then absolutely not. And I'm sorry. There's a lot of other comics out there that are willing to do this. I can't do this. I can't. Yeah. I'm sorry. And
there you go.
That's what they do. You'll do an amazing set. They'll watch your set and be like, oh my God, he's so funny. You know that joke he did? What if we took it and put it in a sketch?
Right.
And then you're looking, scrolling the internet, and you see your joke as a sketch, and it's like, do I do it? Like, can I still do it? It's
Yeah, I know. And
scary.
And like, that's the one reason, too, why like you try and do like topical stuff. So mm-hmm. if they take it, they're like, okay, like, well, I've only, like, this joke has a shelf life of like 6 months, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, so you're like, okay, like, after the 6 months, then they'll live on as a sketch forever or whatever, but you know, at least I got the meat and potatoes out of it.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about internet comedians? You know, and then the ones who try and make the leap from the small screen to the stage to where there's no delete button.
What do you mean?
You know, the ones who are like, okay, let me try stand up and I'm gonna do stand-up.
I think that I don't like it when, because you have your lane.
Right.
And just because you've gotten to a certain level and what you chose to do, I think that if you start comedy, you got to start from the bottom too. Mm-hmm. And you've got to work your way up just like everybody else did. And I don't like when actors or actresses say, hey, I'm going to try stand up. And just because of their name, they get paid differently. They get bigger arenas. They're getting arenas and they've only been doing comedy for 2 months and they're having, you know, these people who are nowhere near funny open up for them, and then are going up there and they're doing terrible. They are doing, yeah. It's so hard to be sketch and actress and being a comedic actor or actress versus being a comedian.
Right.
Throwing the name, throwing the brand or the comedic in front of actress doesn't make you a comedian.
It's true.
It means that somebody's writing your lines and you're saying them very well, that right. We think that you did it yourself. That's what it is.
Right.
But bringing that to stage, you might not have that presence because you are an actress. And you think that because you're an actress, you're going to act like a comedian? No, it's not going to work.
And put the lines down so I can get them.
And they're doing it, and they're not even. I've seen actors and actresses get on stage and try stand up, and I've sat there and go, oh no. You ever seen somebody doing something and you're praying in your head? Yeah. Like, you're like, come on, pick it up. Come on, don't do that. Don't stay there. Don't fall.
Yeah.
I do that sometimes, and I've seen them do it, and because of who they were, they got a huge crowd out. And they get on the stage and the crowd is yelling and they're going. And they started that first minute and I was like, oh, this is going to be this is going to be so bad.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. I don't think it's fair. I think we put a lot of work into it.
Right.
And for you to just have the name and you get all this stuff because of your name work.
Right. Right.
The same way you work to get in that position to be that actor or actress, you have to work.
Do the same thing.
Yeah, work.
Yeah.
And it should be a little easier for you, but work. Still put your work in. That way you appreciate it more.
Yeah, and you'll get good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll
get. So you're not just.
Because even if I'm a writer and you're an actor or actress and you say you want to do comedy and I write something funny for you, that doesn't mean you can deliver it on stage. It's different from take one.
Right.
We need to do a little more funny. Put a little more oomph into it. Take two. You did great this time. Just give us a little bit more. Take three. It's different because you only have one take.
Yeah.
And that silence will humble you quickly.
Light sweating.
You will be on stage like, and then I walked across the stage and I said, who did this? Nothing? Nobody? Okay. Can we do another take? No, you can't. This is live.
Yeah.
Enjoy. Eat this up. Live in this moment forever. And don't come back.
That's hilarious. I was at a comedy show, and this internet guy came in. Big guy.
Funniest ones.
And so I watched the set, and he did like a 5-minute set, but just the structure, like, it wasn't there. He was all over the place, and then he closed on crowd work, but it wasn't strong crowd work, right? And then like. You can tell that he was like, all right, like, this obviously isn't working, so let me just get off the stage. And like, it's almost like watching someone like dig their own grave and then like jump into it.
And be
then,
like, pull the dirt on top. Just let him come on down.
Because I was just like, man. And again, his millions of followers would have no idea. Because there's maybe like 50 people in this club. You know, and his millions of followers have no idea that he just...
Even trying.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to them, he's still hilarious. Mm-hmm. But now to those 50 people
who were
in there, right, were like, man, I just saw such and such on stage. And he was funny, but he wasn't as funny as it was online.
And the emojis are terrible. They'll put up like little bombs next to whatever. It's terrible. But what he's doing is he's saying... He's verbally producing a sketch on stage, and it doesn't work. You're trying to tell them what the sketch would look like. Like, it's difficult, but I don't like it, though.
What would you say is probably the biggest or the best piece of advice that you have gotten over the years that you've been doing stand-up?
It would have to have come from my husband.
Okay.
And the best piece of advice that I have ever gotten from him... Which is the best piece of advice I've gotten from anyone was remember who you are and stop trying to make everybody else happy. Remember who you are. Remember what you're here to do. Remember what you stand for. Get up. Because, you know, we're entertainers. Sometimes we fall.
Right.
And Nick's got to be like the rock. Like, he literally holds me together sometimes, because I do lead like a really busy life. Mm. And sometimes I'm like, just, oh, and he always comes and goes, come on, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm just tired and I can't. He was like, where's the Takara I met? Let's get it together, pick it up. We need to get these open mics. We need to hit these shows. We need to be moving. And one day I was just like, this is hard.
Yeah.
And he goes, you forgot who you are? You forgot the Takara I met, who was doing 30 shows in 30 days? Because that's what I used to do in New York. Mm. He was like, you forgot who you were? You forgot? That's what I was attracted to, the 30 shows in 30 days, always moving, always somewhere, always smiling, always ready to go get it right. together, pick it up, and let's go. And that's like the best advice I could ever have gotten, because now every time I feel a certain way, I just be like, oh, if he was here, he'd be like, get up.
Right.
Stop trying to be like everybody else. Stop trying to make everybody else happy. Your greatest gift is that you are who you are.
Yeah.
And sometimes we forget who we are.
Yeah.
So that's the best piece of it. It's weird that it comes from him, but...
I mean, but it's also nice that it comes
from
him.
It's sweet that it comes from him, but it's like, ah, he's right again. Like, I never want him to be right. Like, I always want him to be, it's your fault, but when he's right, it's awesome. So, yeah.
Now, for the new comedians, the people who are thinking about doing comedy, who listen to these podcasts, who are watching, what would you say to them? Like what would be your... Like, don't do it, or...
Yeah, try it.
Be original. And don't be scared. There's nothing that you're going to say that someone doesn't get. Somebody's always going to get something that you say. And don't be afraid to be different. Don't do jokes just because somebody else did it. And don't stick to what's happening now, because what's happening now fades.
Right.
You know, just don't be afraid. Don't be intimidated, and work. Hustle, move, you know, just get on stages and meet new people and be likable, and most importantly, be humble. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing you can be. The most important thing to me is just being humble. People come and be like, oh my God, are you so funny? You kill. I'll be like, oh, thank you so much. Oh, you made my day. Like, so remain humble, because it speaks volumes to people. And just, you know, and don't be scared. Don't be afraid to have fun. Do it for fun. Like, I don't know. I like the fact that I don't do comedy for money.
I mean, but will you take the money?
Oh, absolutely. But I like the fact that it doesn't define me yet.
Right.
I don't think I'm in a place in comedy where money defines me yet. I like the fact that I can just go on stage and have fun. And there's no pressure on my back that you paid me this amount, so I gotta do good.
Right.
I like knowing that you ain't give me nothing, so I'm gonna try this new joke. I hope that's okay with you. I like that, and people get so caught up in finances and the financial aspect of it that they forget to have fun.
Right.
Have fun. That's what comedy's for. Like, go out there and just have fun. I'm having fun.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, okay. There you go.
There you go.
So you just gotta have fun.
Have fun.
Be original.
Be original.
Don't see. And you know what I noticed? I don't know if everyone else noticed it.
What?
But there were some little underlying things that had a little double entendre in what you were saying.
What did I say?
Be original.
Be yes.
Don't just do something because someone else is doing it. Be yourself and don't be afraid to be different.
Don't be afraid. You know, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Everybody wants to live up to this character that everybody thinks they want, but I want to be the person you didn't even know you wanted. I want to be that person that's like, I didn't even know you were out there.
Right.
But I like you.
Right.
That's what I want to be.
That's strong.
Yeah.
I like that.
I don't want to be a specific size. I don't want to be a specific gender or color. I want to be the person you didn't know you wanted. And I'll wait. Just be patient. It'll come. So that's my advice. I hope y'all liked it.
So what do you have coming up? Where can people see you live? They want all of this.
All of it? Sure.
Where can they see you?
I will be at the HaHa on Tuesday. Other than that, I'm really not sure. You can catch me on Facebook Live. I'm always on there because I never have anything to do. Or if I do have stuff to do, I have children and I need to talk to grown-ups. So I Facebook Live often, and it's Takara Williams /Carthen. My Instagram is Takara Carthen. Twitter, again, is Takara Comedian. And just follow me on social media and you guys will be able to see when my upcoming shows are and things like that. And it's fun. It's all fun.
Nice.
Yes.
That's good.
That's good. It's great.
That's fantastic.
I'm having fun.
Listen, I enjoyed having you here. I know that you at home watching, you enjoyed Takara. And if you do enjoy all of the other shows that we have here at Black Hollywood Live, let me tell you, like, golf's first major is right around the corner, and you can play a 1 week fantasy golf for free at DraftKings.com. Just pick six golfers before tee off and stay under the salary cap. Rack up points for streaks, per hole performances, and tournament finishes. Outscore the competition, and you could win big with every tournament. Whether you live or breathe golf, or you're just ready to try a new fantasy sport, DraftKings brings the excitement of the game to a whole new level with every monster drive made and every putt bringing you closer to victory. And DraftKings is more than just fantasy golf. Choose from a variety of sports to showcase your skills. Mm-hmm. Millions of sports fans have already discovered DraftKings. Now it's your turn. This isn't fantasy, this is DraftKings. Thank you, Takara.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming.
It was a lot.
It was fun. We had laughs. I feel like I know you better now.
I know me now too.
You know, yeah. like, and I need to come over your house for Taco Tuesday.
Yeah, duh.
Now.
That's Tuesday.
That's what's gonna happen.
Tacos and sangria.
Yeah,
that's what we do.
We will get it cracking, yes. And I can meet this tall son.
Yeah, and this bad baby.
Yeah, I feel like I know him now. Just based off of what you and Nick have talked about, I feel like he's my son.
Yeah. this is fun.
Thank you guys for watching. You can follow me all over the internet at the Nick Perdue. And until next time, we'll see you soon.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.